Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to Torture Cast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! Let's go, with hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is Torture Cast.
It's Thursday, June 9th, 2022, and this is episode 255 of the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King. We're coming to you before the Giants and Rockies wrap up their three-game series. Our schedule's a little wonky, but it's all good. I'm here with Eric Nathanson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I've actually been under the weather lately, so if I suddenly turn green and disappear from the screen, it's not because of the Giants' defense. It just means I have to go to the hospital, so somebody call my wife. I would appreciate that. But other than that, I'm doing good. I don't get to look forward to vacation like you do, but I know you got some fun stuff coming up, and it's going to be a fun juggle between Giants baseball, and you're going on vacation somewhere, I think.
Yeah, we're leaving next week. We're going to Maui, so we're going to take a little well-rested time off. The kids get out of school on, tomorrow's our last day of school, so we'll just pack over the weekend, and then we head on out. So it'll be our first kind of big vacation since COVID, right? It's been about 3 years, so we never were traveling prior to that because of all the restrictions and everything. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of rest and relaxation, a lot of recuperation. It'll be a great time. I think the Giants need a little bit of that too, to be honest. They got a lot of stuff going on right now, and certainly I think we'll just talk about the elephant in the room right away, but the Giants did it. They pulled the trigger on something that we thought could happen. I didn't think it was going to happen yet, but so it's a little sooner than I expected. I'm not against the move. I'm just a little surprised that it's happening right now, but the Giants did make a trade with the Phillies for catcher Austin Wins, and they demoted Joey Bart to AAA Sacramento, and wow. Wow, that's amazing, especially considering Wins is a career 216 hitter in 310 at-bats. He's not, you know, they got him for another pitcher and some cash. It's not like this is a major trade. He's probably just a serviceable quad A catcher. So it's a little odd in the sense that they're kind of swapping a quad A for a quad A, a like for like, just different ways of thinking about it. Wins is not as much of a power hitter, doesn't walk as much as Bart, but strikes out about half as much as Bart. So I don't know if, like, when you're talking about created runs or runs created plus, you're really getting anything better. I think this is just more about getting Joey Bart's head right, and they had to have a substitute to do that. I don't know. Is that kind of the way you look at it? They needed him to work on mechanics or his headspace or something?
Yeah, it's definitely that they want him to work on it in the minor leagues, because the more he tries to work it out in the major leagues, the more his long-term success and psyche and all that stuff can get beaten down. Because you could absolutely curb a successful career by playing them where they're not ready. And Joey Bart has shown he's not ready. He doesn't stop with the strikeouts. He doesn't stop swinging through pitches in the zone. It's really just been his biggest hole. It's tough to say, but the whole strike zone has been his biggest hole this year. You can't say that, like, he even goes against the plan and chases too much. Like Tyro, for example, chases more out of the zone than Joey Bart does. So, like you mentioned, Bart is valuable with the walks and the getting on base and that aspect of the game, but that just wasn't enough. And I think the reason you bring in a guy like Wins, because he's not a Farhan guy. I mean, the guy's got 16 walks and 331 plate appearances. Mm-hmm. That's not a Farhan.
That's what I noticed. I was like, he's like anti-Farhan.
Right, and it really was kind of concerning in a sense, but it means the Giants are willing to burn Austin Wins and not Joey Bart. If somebody's going to have to take the brunt of the work and not be as good and not come through, it might as well be this guy while Bart plays every day in Sacramento, because he's not going to play every day in San Francisco anymore. He's just not. Kurt Casale is the starter. We didn't expect to be here, but he's played well enough to be the starter. And if he continues hitting .220, that's enough for the Giants at this point. So it was a bit of a shocker just because you didn't see it coming. There was no, like, little rumblings beforehand. It just kind of came out of nowhere. But you know, hey, what's best for Bart is probably that. And it always, you know, it always makes a point to consider that Farhan didn't draft him, so you don't know how long the leash is in general. But I do expect we'll see Joey Bart back sometime this season.
Yeah, Kurt Casale, the guy who's taking over the starter role right now. I mean, look, already his WAR is almost at 1 this year. It's 0.8. His OPS is 727. Not too bad, right? His batting average is almost right at league average at 235. I think league average now is actually 240. It's been creeping up. I looked at that today. So he's right around league average, and he's a catcher. So, you know, you kind of knock that down a little bit. So Kurt Casale's been a wonderful surprise in terms of how much better he started out this year than last year. Remember that? I mean, he had a great second half. Yeah. But last year, he really struggled in the beginning. And I was like, well, I guess he's a serviceable backup. But if you add up his last half last year and now this year, I mean, he's been a very good starting catcher. Not an all-star, but very good. And so I think the Giants are very comfortable because they've seen Casale at this level of production for about a year's worth of baseball in a row now, and that they're confident in his ability to take on that load. And yeah, they love Joey Bart. They want him to succeed more than anything, and then that's the case. You touched upon it. He's just not getting any better. And in fact, his strikeout rate seems to be getting a little bit worse. He just, and you're right, his chase rate is not as bad as you'd think for a guy who strikes out a lot. His on-pace percentage is good for his 158 batting average, right? Like, you wouldn't expect that. So he's drawing his walks. So he's recognizing pitches in the zone and out of the zone. That seems to be okay. It's the fact that anything in the zone, he just doesn't touch. I don't know what the reason for that is. I don't think I'm smart enough to know that. And if the Giants are smart enough to know that, and Joey Bart was smart enough to know it, he'd have it fixed already. So I think that's what they need to work on.
And that's why you see promise in him, though, is because he is so good at recognizing pitches and what he should be swinging at and shouldn't be swinging at. But just as we've said, the problem is he just not making contact, and that's an issue at this point. And Casale, you know, I noticed he only grounded to one double play so far this year, too. That's that's not bad in just about 100 at-bats from a slow, quote-unquote, catcher.
Right.
He'll put together a good at-bat. He'll fight one off to right field. He'll punch one over the second baseman if he can. Something that just didn't seem Bart was doing. He was going all for nothing. So hopefully this, you know, it really does it for him. You always root for the guy because you don't want somebody who's drafted number two overall to fail. You want to see your organization hit when they have that high of a draft pick. Will Clark was the number two overall pick.
Yeah.
And the Giants hit on that draft pick. So you want Joey Bart to be of similar substance. And so that's why it's so polarizing and such a big topic to talk about at this point, because I mean, he was up there. He was a top five draft pick. The Giants don't get many of those. So you want to see a guy like that succeed, and hopefully he still will. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I know that when you look at his draft class, and I pasted it there in the show notes as well, just as a reminder.
Yeah, if you want to look back around,
it's been interesting to look at it because a lot of times you're like, okay, we still don't know what the long-term prognosis and value of Joey Bart's going to be. And for all we know, I mean, it would be interesting. I haven't had the time to do the comps, but I would love to go back and look at all-stars that struggled in their first year or two. And it would be really interesting to see what names pop up. I think one of them would be Matt Williams for the Giants. Absolutely. Remember him?
Yeah,
he struggled so much, and he was getting sent up and down I guess it was Phoenix at the time, the Firebirds. All the time. And everyone's like, oh, he's a bust, get rid of him. Why do we have him? And look at what happened to him, right? So I'm not saying that Joey Bart's going to be Matt Williams, but I think there's examples of this. If you look at his draft class, though, it's 2018. He was drafted number two, like you said. So if you look at the top 10 real quickly, I'm just going to look at this for comparison. The Giants aren't like, they didn't do the worst so far out of this. And again, we still don't know how Joey Bart's going to turn out. But Casey Mize went number one, pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. He has a career record now in the major leagues of 7-13. Of course, he pitches for the Tigers, so you expect that. Yeah. A 4.29.
I mean, he can't do much there.
What are you going to do, right? Like, if he played for the Dodgers, his ERA might be the same, but his record would be reversed. It'd be 13-7, right? He has a 4.29 ERA. Okay, not bad for a guy who's been in the league for a couple years. But his career WAR now is a 2.7. So basically, he's worth, you know, three wins above a dude from Quad A that, you know, would have been pitching for him. So not too bad. But the future is still long for this guy and Joey Bart. Joey Bart, of course, so far is a 0.3 WAR. If you want to look, that's kind of like an apples to apples. It's kind of the best thing, one of the better things to look at in terms of comparisons between pitchers and position players and catchers. Alec Bohm for the Phillies, of course, he's a regular starter for them right now for the Phillies. He's got 730 at-bats now in the major leagues. And if you look at his numbers, he's slashing 271, 15, and 90 for that 730 at-bats. So not horrible numbers, but his WAR is a minus one. And I looked at his defensive WAR, so and it's not very good. So I think that's, you know, that's his overall WAR. I think it's his defense that's lacking. But his offensive WAR, I don't have it right now. But so anyway, serviceable major leaguer.
A lot of playing time, though.
A lot of playing time, right? But it is kind of weird that he's a minus one WAR. That's not the best.
Yeah.
Nick Madrigal for the White Sox shortstop, 1.7 WAR. He's had 400 bats in the major leagues, hitting 291. Pretty damn good. Of course, the big one here, I think, the one that has probably done the best out of the top 10 is Jonathan India from the Cincinnati Reds. And he's got a 3.5 career WAR now. And so far his career, he's slashing 271 with 21 bombs. And, you know, he's always making highlights and everything like that. So
didn't he win Rookie of the Year one of these 2 years?
Yeah, he won last year or the year before. I can't remember. I don't remember. Was it a shortened season? Was it 2020 COVID season?
I don't know. That could be why his WAR is only 3.5.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, sorry that I'm blanking out on that, guys. We should know that. But
I don't know. I mean, I barely watch the Reds, even though I
I know. It's the Reds, right? Jared Kelenic from the Mets. He's got a minus 1.8 WAR. He's only hitting 173 in the majors. Ryan Weathers. He was drafted out of high school by the Padres. He's got a career record now of 4-7 with a 5.32 ERA, so it's a 0.2 negative 0.2 WAR. So again, nothing special. Carter Stewart was drafted by the Braves, pitcher out of high school. He's pitching in Japan right now, so he's not even in the majors. Kyler Murray by the A's, of course, we all know what happened to him. He said no to baseball and yes to football, so he's the current quarterback and perennial Pro Bowler for the Arizona Cardinals. So. He's probably had the best sports career out of these top 10 so far.
I'm sure of that.
He's made the most money and probably had the most success and notoriety. And then number 10, Travis Swaggerty from the Pirates. He finally made his MLB debut this year. He's 0-3 in his major league career. So you look at the top 10, and you have a couple guys that are doing pretty well and may go on to all-star careers. We'll see. So, you know, the Giants have a lot of time with Joey Bart. A lot of people call him a bust already. You can't do that. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know why people say crap like that. But, you know, there it is.
It's too early to tell. Casey Mize, I think, you know, it's funny. I look at this list, and the only name I didn't know is the Carter Stewart name, who is pitching in Japan. So that kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Mize, though, you figure he'll still do good. He'll be a decent pitcher that maybe Detroit can build around. And Travis Swaggerty is just—it's such a great name. I mean,
I
don't know. I don't know if it's from Apollo 13 because Swaggerty is the name of who is that? It's not Christian, whatever. But Jack Swaggerty—it's a good Kevin Bacon character. It's a good name Swaggerty. You know, like he already brings the swagger to it. And Ryan Weathers, son of David Weathers, who I totally remember watching pitch back in the day. But Kyler Murray, I think, is the only one of these that's ever appeared in a playoff game, too. So
no, damn. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, because Bart was not up for the playoffs last year, was he?
No, I don't believe so. And he'd be the only one. I mean, Philly didn't make it last year. We know the Reds didn't. And it was last year for Jonathan India where he won Rookie of the Year.
Okay, so. It was last year. Yeah, I knew it was one of the 2 years. I just couldn't remember what. So, yeah, you know, Jonathan India is doing well. So there you go. We all wish Joey Bart the best. I don't know how long he's going to be down. I don't think anyone does. I was listening to KMBR this morning. Sean Estes was on. And Sean Estes got a little serious, I would say. I was kind of surprised, but I understand what he's saying. He made comments to the effect of, like, Joey Bart needs to take this seriously. And I know he will. But this is a message from up top. This is a message of that you need to – we invested a lot in you. You need to figure this out. Otherwise, you may not make it back up here. We're not just going to call you back up because your name's Joey Bart. You need to show us that you're worthy of coming back up here. And so he says it's a clear message. The Giants aren't, you know, fooling around. And if Joey Bart languishes or just is mediocre in AAA, Sean said, you may not see Joey Bart back up at the major league level this year. You really may not. He's going to have to show him somehow. Huh. And I was a little surprised by that because I figured, oh, they'll put him down there for a month and then call him back up. But Sean seems to have the view of, like, they're not screwing around. And he needs to put in the work and show him with results down in AAA. Now, we've seen his results before in AAA, and they were pretty good. And so that's what I'm questioning. Like, what if he goes down and he starts raking again, right? He was mashing home runs and hitting pretty well down in AAA. So what if he does that again? Does that mean he's fixed anything? I don't know. Maybe the scouting report's better in the major leagues. Maybe they know his weaknesses. And the Giants should know those weaknesses too, so hopefully they're addressing those. But again, it seems to be that, you know, swing and misses, right? His contact rate is just abhorrent right now. I mean, he's striking out 45.4% of his plate appearances, right? If you take away his plate appearance, like his walks, right? If you take away the walks and just look at his at-bats, he's got 49 strikeouts in 90 at-bats. That's more than half of his at-bats, which is crazy. I mean, I couldn't imagine playing baseball where one out of two times I'm striking out and sitting back down. That would just be just so demoting. You know what I mean? Yeah. It would just be the worst.
I think he feels dejected going back to the dugout every time.
Mm-hmm. Just to let you know, of qualified hitters, now Joey Bart is not a qualified hitter. You have to have 3.1, you know, plate appearances per game for those batting titles and qualifications. But if you look at those guys, Patrick Wisdom has the highest strikeout rate of 35.2%. So it's a full, Joey Bart's a full 10% higher than the worst in the majors. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's not good. He also has the highest strikeout rate of any player with 100 or more plate appearances. Because you can't look at a guy who has 20 plate appearances, right? It's not a high enough sample size. So if you make, because he's got 108 plate appearances, so if you cut it off at 100, he's got the highest strikeout rate. So, and league average is 22.2%. So he's double the league average. Double. That's not good.
I tried to defend him for so long, saying let him adjust. But after the month of May and just how he looked, it looks like he's lost at the plate in general. So I'm with you, though. Even if he goes and mashes again, what has changed? What has he done differently to do the same thing? He already showed them that. So what more can he show them? I think this really opens the door for another trade. Somebody like Wilson Contreras or somebody who's out there that they can go for. It's no offense to Kurt Casale. They just would rather have a bigger bat in the lineup if they could and shouldn't be batting Kurt Casale third, but that's a whole other thing. But Kurt, so if they could, I think this could be the move that leads to another move, especially if Joey does not do anything in AAA. If Joey goes to AAA and continues to strike out and continues to not see the ball well, I could see them even more triggering a move at that point. So we're going to have to talk about that probably next show and the show after that, getting closer to the trade deadline to see if that's something the Giants are looking into, because there's definitely going to be options out there.
What if his problem is like from an old movie from the 80s? He just needed glasses the whole time.
Oh, my God.
They're like, oh, my God, he was blind. Starts hitting 400.
Have you ever tried this? Well, I don't want to put fingers in my eyes. Then put goggles on. We'll just see how they look.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like a little major league, right? Oh, my God. That would be freaking hilarious. I love how no one knew that until, hey, you read that chart? Charlie Sheen's like, they're like, holy shit. It's like, dude, they have something called Major League Physicals. They have to do physicals. They do all that stuff.
Nowadays, yes. I mean, who knows? That was the 80s. I'm not sure everybody could have passed a drug test back then. So
that's a good point. Yeah,
might have been a different
game. They were Daryl Strawberry and company were sniffing the baselines at that point. There was a lot of that going on. Holy moly! All right, well, let's talk about the Giants in general. They're 3-3 since we last recorded last Thursday. They split 4 in Miami, and they've split the first 2 against Colorado back at home. They have their third rubber game of the series today here in about an hour from now or so. The Giants sit at 30-25, 5 games above 500, in 3rd place in the National League West, 5.5 games back of the Dodgers, 4 games back of San Diego. They've been holding that final wild card spot pretty comfortably for quite a while, but they got some noise coming up behind them now. Braves have won 7 in a row, and they're only 1 game back of the Giants now, and Phillies won 6 in a row, which is funny. It's like the Giants went in there, got Philly, they fired their manager, and boom, now they've won 6 in a row. And now Philly's 3.5 games back of the Giants. So the wild card race is starting to tighten up a little bit. And, you know, the Giants cannot get too comfortable in assuming that they're just going to slip in no problem with the wild card, especially the Braves are starting to catch. This is what the Braves did last year, a little bit later, but the Braves were not good at all in the first half, and they were way behind the Mets. And then they just caught fire, made those trades, and then just, you know, killed everyone and made it all the way to the World Series. So, look, May was bad. It was mediocre. It was their first losing record since, you said, what, 2019 or 2020, whatever it was. I'm getting a little more concerned now. They've been playing mediocre baseball for about 5+ weeks now. This is a long stretch, Eric. This is not a bad week.
That's true, but I'll give you some reason for optimism. The other teams that they're playing around aren't playing much better. In the last 30 games, the Dodgers are 17-13. In the last 30 games, the Giants are 16-14. So it's not as big of a difference. It's just that they've managed to tread water. The Padres have the same record as the Dodgers over the last 30 games. They're also 17-13. So they're hanging around by being 16-14 and being over 500. So that is reason for optimism, I would say. But when you have a weekend like they did in Miami, they could have absolutely picked up a game in one of the games that they blew by losing it in the bottom of the ninth.
Yep.
And you just don't want to see stuff like that happen. The first game of this Colorado series was a game that they should have won. And then it turned around on a Blackman homer, and the offense just absolutely disappeared. So, you know, they're already at a point where you're looking at games where they could have done this and they could have done that to make this a closer race. And I think the Giants are just – they're where they're supposed to be. They're fighting for the fifth, sixth seed. You know, Atlanta, like you mentioned, they're one off their heels. But Philly still has a losing record. Like, let's worry about Philly when they
– Yeah, when they cross the 500 mark. I agree with you on that one.
Because I think with for as much concern as you have about the Giants, as I have about the Giants, it comes in the fact that they're not playing like a really good ball club instead of just a good ball club. Because they're going to always play as a good ball club. We both expect them to be over 500, even if it's just by a few games the entire season. So, I mean, it might be time to reset expectations for some fans who thought that they could go for the division. Because 5.5 is a lot of games. Was it 5.5? 6.5? I just looked at it. 5.5 is a lot of games to make up when it's the Dodgers. If it was somebody like in the Brewers or something like that, maybe not. But when it's the Dodgers, it's going to be difficult. So, I mean, they did what they had to do. They split on the road. The whole road trip. 5-5 on the road trip. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about it all today. Today's game is the game that makes a difference. Can Logan Webb go out there and shut down the Rockies? You take 2 of 3 from the Rockies, and that's how you keep winning series and keep a winning record. That's the main difference this year to last year. This year they're splitting a lot of series and losing more. Last year they were winning just about every single series.
Just about every series,
Yeah, and that's why they feel mediocre, is because they were so excellent last season.
Yeah, and you know, look, mediocre is defined as basically kind of right at 500, and they're only 5 games above. But it was that they started the season, 8 or 9 games above 500. So
yeah,
you know, they've slipped.
They definitely played better early on, and it's, you know, injuries. We talked about it. We're going to go through. There's injury updates to go through. There's transactions. I mean, the team has been a revolving door. Mm-hmm. Without having certain mainstays like Belt and Longoria and Crawford and Yastrzemski all in the lineup, Wade at the same time, it's been hard for them to put together any of those kinds of things. So I think that leads us to believe that this might not be what the Giants are, but we're not sure what they can be right now.
Yeah, and I think the last couple of weeks we've kind of beat the dead horse to death about 8 times talking about the Giants pitching. Just the pitching has not been where we expect it to be. The offense has been just fine. They're like 3rd in the National League in runs per game. They're above league average in almost every offensive, you know, category. So I'm not worried about their offense right now. Pitching, we've talked about. But, you know, I mean, we kind of superficially talked about their defense in terms of passing the eye test. We've seen a lot of weaknesses in their defense. I hadn't actually really looked at the metrics of it, and I'm not talking about fielding percentage and all that. But, you know, one of the saber metrics of defensive runs saved. I didn't realize how bad the Giants actually were. They are 2nd to last in the major leagues with a minus 25 defensive runs saved. That means they've basically given up 25 runs because of shitty defense versus the league average. So, I mean, that That's not going to fly, Eric. I mean, when you're second worst in the league in defense, that shows their defense has lost at least several games for them.
I mean, you can imagine they'd probably be five games better right now if their defense had played better. I mean, we can think of instances in random games. There was one where Vossler didn't make a play that could have just been an easy double play to get Cobb out of an inning that led to five runs and a loss. You know, there's already all those to pick apart. It's just, it's been an ugly scene. When you got Wilmer playing third base, it's an ugly scene. You just don't have it. Like, he's done an admirable job covering over at first, but when you got to ask him to get down there at third base, it's a tough ask, and the Giants just haven't been able to handle it, and that's why we see the rotating doors, and that's why Kevin Padlo's here for 5 days and gone. That's why Stuart Fairchild's here for 5 days and gone. It's just been a constant stream of injuries for the Giants so far, which, I mean, really, we talk about their depth all the time, but it's just – it's amazing that they're five games over 500 when you really think about it.
Yeah, with the crappy fielding, pitching in May and now the fielding.
Exactly. I was about to say, the fielding and the pitching combined over the last month, month and a half, it just is not a good formula. It's not a winning formula at all. And anybody who's been watching baseball forever can just see it. You don't even need the defensive metrics to know the Giants are so bad in defensive runs saved right now. It's been obvious. They're just not making the routine plays. And it's happening just about every night. They're losing at least one or two outs on the field.
Yeah, and that can be really big. Just as a comparison, last year the Giants were 11th in the major leagues. But they had a positive total. They had a 32 runs saved total, and they were 11th. So, I mean, you know, they're still above league average there. But this year, like I said, second to last with a minus 25. So they're way, way, way off the pace of last year and not doing so well. So, you know, Mike Dowling here asks in the chat room if Tony DeSclafani is a big loss. I mean, he's definitely a loss, but I'd say the emergence of Jacob Junis would say otherwise, because they would still have pretty much the similar rotation if Disco was in for Junis. I think you could say that Junis might have been a better, you know, long reliever or situational pitcher or whatever, but maybe his groove is starting and Junis is liking it right now. So, and we'll get to his stats in a second. I have him here somewhere, but might as well just bring him up. You know, overall, he's leading all starters. Now, he doesn't technically qualify in terms of, you know, the 3.1 whatever per game or however many innings you need, but he's got enough innings to kind of make a comparison with the other Giants starters. And he's leading all starters with a 2.51 ERA and a 0.93 whip. I mean, his whip's under one. That's more than good. That's excellent. So I don't think Disco could be doing better than that. He had a 3-something ERA last year. His whip was over one. So, yeah, I don't think Disco's a big loss, except for the fact that they just got to throw an extra pitcher in there, right? It's just a different pitcher in the bullpen instead of Junis. But I think the impact is less than we would normally think because of his performance.
Well, what I noticed, too, though, is if Junis had emerged and Disco was healthy, it could have stretched out the rotation a little better, too.
Yeah.
Some of these guys are seemingly running out of gas late in games, and you don't know if it's – I mean, like Webb threw over eight innings one day, and Cap was pulling him in the fifth inning the next game. And, it, you know, part of it was Webb did not have it that day whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But these guys might benefit from having an extra day off and stretching out the rotation. So I think that would be the main – area you're missing DeSclafani, but as far as a five-man rotation is concerned, I don't think it's as big of a deal. I think losing Cobb again right now is a bigger deal than that.
Yeah,
because Cobb's just been inducing weak contact and pretty much putting the ball where he wants for a lot of this season, and this is the second time he's visiting the DL, so it's a little frustrating that they have to keep juggling bullpen games. So as it extends on the whole domino effect to the bullpen, like you said, but Junis could be a long man at this point. But, I mean, hey, they signed Shelby Miller to a minor league deal.
Yeah.
Pitched last night for the first time, so we might have a new long man in the bullpen anyways.
I saw that. That was interesting, yeah. So, I mean, you're right. When other starters go down, you miss that Junis to plug in because now you have to rely on skipping guys on an off day or another bullpen start, right. So.
You're constantly shifting your rotation. Like Webb got moved up. We weren't sure if Webb was going to pitch today or face the Dodgers tomorrow, but he's going to face the Rockies this afternoon.
Yeah.
Gabe feels it's important to win this series right now.
Yeah, they talked to Sean Estes about that this morning too, and they said they, you know, the Murphy Mac show, they were surprised to see that Webb was pitching today instead of, you know, usually Dave Roberts lines up his best starters against the Giants, and typically the Giants will try and do the same. But now you got Webb pitching against Colorado, and they were asking Estes why, and he's like, I'm in Arizona, I can't talk to Webby, I would love to. He's like, but I'm sure it's just Gabe. His mentality is like, let's guarantee a series win. He's like, we got to get a series win. So let's think about that first. I don't know all the calculus that went into it. I haven't heard anything on social media since then. I've been busy all morning. I don't know if you have, Eric, but what would you think about the strategy of throwing Webb against the Rockies, which, yeah, gives you a better chance to win this game versus throwing him against the Dodgers, which, again, that's a tough assignment no matter who pitches. Give me, you know, it really is. But if you do win, it's like a double whammy. It's right. You're gaining a game on the Dodgers. Well, if you beat the Rockies today, you don't necessarily gain a game on the Dodgers. So, and what do you think about that strategy?
Well, and throwing the added aspect, is Webb good with this move, or would he rather face the Dodgers tomorrow? Yeah. Is Webb kind of like, what the hell, man? Or is he like, yeah, that's awesome. Give me the ball. Let me get back out there again. I mean, it doesn't say that you're punting one of the games against the Dodgers, but the Dodgers, the series against the Dodgers, because you're missing Cobb, it's already a rotation of TBD on Saturday. So it's going to be a bullpen game. We'll probably see like Brebbia or somebody starting again. It's just the way they've been right now. Jacob Junis is going to start the Friday night game, and Carlos Rodon will start the Sunday game.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of screws with it in that respect. But I guess Gabe didn't want to push the to-be-determined game for today. I mean, it's the truth. You got to win this series. It's important to win now and then focus on tomorrow. So that's got to be – I think that's as deep as they're looking at it at this point.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't necessarily always want your best starters going against the Dodgers. I know that sounds weird, but it's like take wins where you can get wins, right?
Yes, I agree.
That's so maybe the favorites, you know, the matchups are favorable for Webb against the Rockies. Maybe, you know, he's had a better history. I don't know. Obviously, he did well against the Dodgers last year in the playoffs. I mean, he shut him down.
He pitches well in the daytime, too. And I wonder if that has something to do with it. I don't know. It's just something I've noticed.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Well, let's talk about injuries. We had Brandon Crawford. He was taken out in the fifth inning of the game the other night. He had a quadriceps issue, and he could be held out. Have you seen the lineup for today?
Yeah, he's not in it.
Yeah, he's not in. They were thinking he was going to be day-to-day and probably not playing today. So most likely he'll be back in for the Dodgers series. Lamont Wade Jr. received a final synthetic lubricant injection in his left knee Tuesday and will begin a rehab assignment today with Sacramento. Ugh. That just sounds synthetic lubricant injection. What is that, like liquid meniscus? Is that like the commercial name? Like, what the hell?
Some sort of like added. It just feels like such a foreign object being added to the body.
Did they
starting his rehab assignment today, though. So
yeah, did they like tape a WD-40 can up with like some medical literature and just go, yeah, this is the stuff we need to give you. Shot of WD-40 to the knee.
I can't imagine how it feels too. Like, is it goo? Is it a solid thing?
That's
what reporters need to be asking. These are the hard hitting questions. Lamont, what did it feel like when they injected you with whatever it is?
What was the viscosity of that? How much did they pump into you?
It's exactly like I want to see what it would look like.
Did it include a microchip? Brandon Belt, I saw him taking ground balls yesterday, but his knee is hopefully going to be resolved here in the next day or two. Hopes to ramp up his running program over the next few days before returning from the 10-day injured list, according to Susan Slusser. So hopefully we'll see him maybe this weekend. Not entirely sure. And then you mentioned Alex Cobb with his hammy was placed on the 15-day injured list Tuesday, retroactive to June 4th. And then it says with a neck strain. So I don't... I got my dog by my side too, so don't worry about it. It happens.
Sorry about that, folks.
No worries. That's the beauty of podcasting from home. Just crap happens. It's no big deal.
Somebody's yelling outside, so she's trying to defend us.
So again, this is great, you know, trying to get these guys back. But again, their offense is not what's been limiting. However, I will say we just spoke about the defense. These guys coming back definitely helps the defense, especially Brandon Belt. They need him. You know, they need Brandon Crawford at shortstop every game they can get him, right? Lamont Wade's been really good in the outfield. So those are the guys we need to have. I know most of the weaknesses have been let me look at this real quick. Yeah, the worst in terms of defensive runs saved. I forgot to mention this. Give me what position do you think has the worst defensive runs saved statistic?
I'm going to go third base.
Bingo. -12. -12. Yeah, it's been a lot of Wilmer Flores and Kevin Padlow and others over
Vossler
there. That Vossler and we've seen a lot Estrada of bad plays. Yep. Second
Longo's
worst
back today, so that's good.
That's good. Second worst is second base. That's not a surprise. They were actually the worst in last year's team too, even though they had a positive statistic. The second base was negative last year, and the next is left field with a -8. Their only positives are catcher at 2 and center field at 1. And what's really helping them is their shifting, based on their infield positioning, is rated the best in the major leagues with 19 runs saved. That's best in the majors. So
that amazes me, because the run they gave up yesterday was all because guys hit away from the shift, 3 straight
right.
hits.
You know, you're going to have your exceptions, right? It's going to happen. But as far as statistics have borne out over the season, their shifts have actually been the best in baseball, essentially. So, because that's about positioning. I know, really, really interesting.
I'm glad to hear that number. I was literally talking about those numbers yesterday. I was like, I wonder, in comparison, if the Giants are shifting differently this year than they have in years past. But whatever they're doing is the right formula.
Yeah. So at least they're positioning correctly. It's just that their actual fielders suck. That's the difference right now. Oh my God. All right. So transactions. This is like the longest part of the podcast. I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
it's not the longest.
I'll pick
but
it up.
It seems like it.
So.
Yeah, I'll just read about half the list. But we had, I know we touched upon some of these already, but we had Duggar back on June 2nd on a rehab assignment to Sacramento. The Giants optioned Sam Long to Sacramento on June 3rd, recalled Sean Jelly on the 3rd as well. They optioned Sam Delaplane to the San Jose Giants on the 4th. Then they optioned Jelly to Sacramento on the 4th. They selected the contract of Sam Delaplane from Sacramento on the 4th. It's like these guys, just this revolving door. It's really hard. We're trying to give you the history here, even if it's a little bit long, just to show you how busy they are all the time. And I know last week they were up to 46 players on the roster. They're obviously higher than that, and their record is 54. So I don't know. Are they at 48, 49 right now? Is there something like that?
I'll be there in a sec.
They're getting really close. Okay, they activated 47. Austin Slater, 47. Yeah, they activated Austin Slater on the 4th, and then DFA'd Stuart Fairchild on the 4th. Why don't you pick it up on the 6th?
And then they sent Jason Vossler back down to Sacramento on, is that the 6th? Yes.
6th, yeah.
Which is the same day they recalled Sam Long to get some innings. Sam Long's been up and down, and he looked good, though, his last time out. The other night, Darren Ruff came off the bereavement list. That was a tough break for Darren Ruff. Missing the rest of that road trip. His dad died suddenly, and that's just it's such a tough thing for any grown man to deal with. I gotta wonder. It could go one of two ways. Sometimes when this happens, a guy plays amazingly for the rest of the season for his dad. Sometimes his head isn't there, and you know you never know which way it's going to go, and your heart goes out to a guy like Darren Ruff because he seems like a good dude.
Yeah.
And then yesterday they decided to start making a bunch of other moves when they optioned Joey Bart to the Sacramento River Cats and traded Michael Plassmeyer and Cash to the Philadelphia Phillies for catcher Austin Wins, who we talked about earlier in the program. And Austin Wins' contract was immediately selected by the major league level, and he is, in fact, in the starting lineup today with Logan Webb. They also signed a right-handed free agent pitcher, Ofelki Peralta, to a minor league contract. And I just want to say Ofelki is a fantastic name. I think
sounds like it's a safe way to curse. Ofelki.
Yeah. You could totally throw that in there. You could use it as the bleep. Oh, I like it. It's like a 30 Rock Liz Lemon type word. And then the Giants also signed free agent, like I mentioned, right-handed pitcher Shelby Miller to a minor league contract. And Shelby, as some might remember, had some very good years with the Cardinals.
Yes,
he did.
And has
been traveling around the last few years. He's become a bit of a journeyman, but he could definitely be a long relief addition to the bullpen. And to make room for Austin Wins on the 40-man roster, Kevin Padlow was designated for assignment. And so the Kevin Padlow era ends in San Francisco. Forever Giant, Kevin Padlow. Hashtag.
Yeah, we'll see if he clears waivers. I don't think he's highly sought after. But could you imagine, I mean, being at the level of success, obviously he's had two cups of coffee in the major league. So, you know, I'm sure he's happy about that. But the dude gets signed by the Giants or trade. This is one of the Mariners trades, right? So they trade with him, you know, and maybe he'll go back to the Mariners. Maybe the Mariners will claim him and he'll go back. And then the Giants could trade for him again later in the year. That would be fantastic. But the dude hits 3 home runs in one game for Sacramento. His first game up with the Giants or with Sacramento. And the Giants take a flyer on him and say, okay, we need you up here. He languished. I think he was 2-for-12 in his stint with the Giants at the major league level. So he did nothing special. His defense was very suspect over at third. And then that's it, DFA'd. It's like these disposable players for Farhan. And that's what I kind of equate it to. It's like it's just like your fantasy roster, which he's great at, by the way, where, you know, you draft a guy, you plug him in for a week, and then jettison him, right? Like, oh, we needed you at second base this week. We needed you at third base this week. That's just the way Farhan rolls, man. It's ruthless.
It is. He does view everybody as periphery, and there's just a few core pieces that I don't think he'll touch, but everybody's replaceable in the chess game he's playing.
Yeah, it is. It's a very strange way to live as a Major League Baseball player, but, you know, that's what it is. It's a sum of all the parts and sum of all the moves. It's not sticking two guys in the same position no matter what for the entire year, and if they keep failing, why, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but if it is broke, fix it. Yeah. Try something else, and look what's happened. You know, surprises like, you know, Yaz, and now Luis Gonzalez, and others. That's kind of the fruit that bears well from these kinds of moves. It's just like, you know, a little appetizer sampler. It's like, oh, I heard this was good. Our scouts told us that this dish was good. Let's try a little of this, a little of that, a little of this. And once in a while, you find a winner, you find a keeper, and Giants are good at doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it's no offense to the guys that they don't keep. It's just they're not performing, and literally results matter, and they want to see the fruit of the labor. If you're doing things the way they want to do them and things aren't happening, that's one thing. But, I don't mind it. I really don't. I mean, it's tough to keep up with everybody. Like, I'm impressed that my wife knows who Luis Gonzalez is, because she's like, oh, okay, I've seen him enough now.
Yeah.
You know, every day there's a Stuart Fairchild, a Kevin Padlow, Austin Wins. Every day there's a random guy on the team that you've never heard of before, and it does make it kind of like, whew, it's a little head spinny at times.
Yeah, it gets a little impersonal, you know what I mean? It's like you feel less connected to a third of the team, you know? It's not like,
and then you have to debate, do I want to invest in Yaz? Do I want to invest in Wilmer? Do I want to buy this Yaz jersey, or could they trade him away next week?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big factor right there. You know, especially Crawford's got another year. Belt, who knows what, because he was signed arbitration this year, right? So he accepted the qualifying offer. So he may or may not be with the Giants next year. Posey's gone, right? The old guard has pretty much transitioned away. You got two guys from two championships, and that's about it. Yeah, the jerseys is an interesting thing, and that actually relates to my question of the week. I kind of wanted to throw in a new segment here. We'll see if it sticks. So my question of the week for you, Eric, is, and I'm not saying this partially either way. I'm literally asking this totally like third-party objective, right? And I'll give you my feelings on it. Are you okay with grown men wearing baseball jerseys at baseball games?
Yes to jerseys, no to jerseys. I think that's where I stand. I think it's all right. And also, if it's worn tactfully, if you're a white suburban dude wearing a baseball jersey and khaki cargo shorts and your sandals with your cap on backwards, like mine is at the moment, you're not harming anybody. I think you're totally fine. But the guy who dresses up in full uniform and stuff like that, that creeps me out a little bit when you're a grown man. But when it comes to jerseys, I don't think so. So jerseys, yeah, I do. I think it's okay for grown men to wear them. But just, you know, don't tuck them in. Don't try to look stylish. Just own the fact that you're wearing a baseball jersey. And you can't help but look like kind of a schlub when you wear a baseball jersey, because you don't look like a baseball player.
Exactly.
So I think, yeah. So I'm totally good with it. I am. I don't personally own any jerseys. It's funny. I thought about that the other day. I don't own a lot of anything. Mm-hmm. Like if I had gotten Charlie Blackman's 200th home run, I thought about it. What do I get? A Charlie Blackman bat? What do I care? So yeah. Like I don't hold on to a lot of the stuff, but like I had a Timmy jersey I held on to for a long time. So I think that as a grown man, yeah, it's okay. How did this come up? Where did this this come from? This had to have been a discussion somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get involved in the discussion. It was on Twitter, and I can't remember the name of the guy. I'd have to go look it up. It was just I wanted to recall it and talk about it ourselves. But he started this thread, and it gained, like, mega traction. It went viral with, like, hundreds and hundreds, if not more than 1,000 responses, kind of spanning the gamut. But basically, he had a 4 or 5 tweet soliloquy about how you are a loser and a douchebag and you have no life and you shouldn't even be attending games. Like, it was so harsh about, he was like majorly judging adult men who wear baseball jerseys to baseball games. Not talking about
my life.
You know? I know, right? Not like wearing it at the mall or whatever like that, but like it's like specifically wearing just, and he actually encompassed all sports. He meant football. He started with baseball, but he's like, I don't care any sport. Like if you're a Celtics fan, if you're a Falcons fan, you should not be wearing what they wear on the field. Like if I go and my family doesn't come to my work and wear a suit and tie to cheer me on. And like, it was like illogical comparisons and analogies where you're like, that's not the same thing because no one does that, right? Like, that's a dumb analogy, right?
They don't pay money to watch you work.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, but grown men don't wear my attire for my work and cheer me on. It's like, right, because no one comes to your work to cheer you on, you dipshit. Anyway. Well, I mean,
plus civic pride comes into play. You know, people from San Francisco are proud to be from San Francisco. People from Chicago are proud to be from Chicago. People from New York, for whatever reason, are proud to be from New York. So they want to show that pride somehow. So I think that that ties into it in a good way and in an acceptable way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, for those of you on Facebook, you can see jersey right over. I have 2 jerseys right over my head here. I've got 4 hanging in my room. I own, I think, 8 or 9 Giants jerseys. When I was a teenager and maybe into college, I'd wear them out like going to the grocery store, right? They were just part of my attire. I'd throw them all on. I also had a Carlton Fisk White Sox jersey I was really into. I also had
the beach sock looking one, the banner one with
no, Sox. No, it was the cursive font, Chicago. It was a road jersey, 72 Fisk on the back. I was a big Fisks fan. It was like, you know how you like attach to certain players that are not Giants, you know? There's certain guys that you kind of follow, and he was one of them. It shows you how old I am. But, you know, I had that. I had like a Frank Thomas jersey up in my, poster up in my high school room because I Ken Griffey, you know, same thing. But then I stopped wearing jerseys, period. And the only time I wear jerseys now is I do wear them at games. I throw them on to Giants games as if I'm attending as a fan. And I've never really thought about it being weird. Like, it's always been normal. Like, half the guys at the park are wearing jerseys. I to me, it seems like totally normal. Like, that's the whole point of jerseys. Like, it's a huge, you know, industry is buying replica or authentic jerseys. I don't think I'll buy another authentic one the rest of my life because they're $450 now, which is just a joke. But, you know,
who knows? Maybe the next Willie Mays will come through in our lifetime, and you'll be like, "I have to own that 30 years from now."
Yeah, so I thought it was an interesting question because I never really thought it was a controversial thing. I will say most of the responses are like, "Dude, how does someone wearing a jersey at a ballpark affect you in any way whatsoever? Judge them internally all you want. They're not doing anything to you. You fine. Go in your sweater and khakis. Like, what do you go to a game in? You know?" And he's all, "Well, I just go in a t-shirt and a ball cap." It's like, so some dude throws on a jersey over their t-shirt and suddenly they're a douchebag? Like, it's really weird how some people draw the lines. It's like, you're never going to be the player. You're never going to be a major leaguer. Why are we even pretending? And it's like, I don't think I am when I'm wearing a jersey. I'm not pretending. I'm wearing it to say, hey, I like the Giants. Go Giants. That's all I'm doing, right? I don't have t-shirts. I have a couple t-shirts. I'm wearing a jersey. That's it. Like, it's a nice, high-quality clothing item. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting topic because I have heard a few people say that, including some women, go, "I don't understand grown men wearing, like, that's what they wear on the field." It's like, yeah, you guess who else wears it who doesn't play? The manager and the coaches. Yes. You know, like, that's like, could you imagine, like, Steve Kerr suiting up again on the sideline, you know? Or Mike Shanahan donning a jersey and a football helmet to coach from the sidelines, you know? I mean, like, baseball is unique in that way. It is the only sport in which the coaches dress up as the players. do.
You know, and the coaches and the managers made it okay for grown men to wear these jerseys. You're right.
And that's my point. I think that that's a really important point. It's like, look, you know, the 65-year-old fat white guy is wearing a jersey. I can wear a jersey. It's okay.
Look at him. His stomach's sticking out over his belt. I can wear it. I won't tuck it in. I'll look thinner.
Yeah. I do actually feel sorry for some of the very overweight coaches and managers in the game because they got to put that crap on. And they're like, God damn it, this thing doesn't fit me like it did 30 years ago. You know?
They're reminded every
You could see everything.
Well, they can't.
Yeah, well, see how big I am. I can't wear a bulky something. Oh, I love it. It's good shit. Speaking of which, Joe Maddon was fired after they lost 12 in a row for the Angels. And now they've lost 14 in a row.
14, yeah.
Woo, that's a rough one, man. I love that. That's like, they were so good, right? I thought, oh my God, the Angels are like, every year you think, they got the lineup, but they don't have the pitching. Let's see what happens. And it never works out. This year, it's like, oh my God, the first 2 months, they're doing well. They're doing well. And then, I mean, 14 in a row, franchise record.
How do you have two of possibly the best players in Major League history playing together at the same time and not be a winning team? How is that just possible? I don't understand it.
I am a huge.
It's like put DiMaggio and Mantle together. Well, not
yeah. That. I'm a huge Mike Trout fan. I think the guy is great for baseball. He's very humble as a superstar. And I feel so goddamn sorry for him, Eric. He's never been in the playoffs, and now it looks like it won't happen this year unless they right the ship. And it may not happen for several more years. I don't think he's going to go his entire career now with expanded playoffs and never make the playoffs. But that's the stage you want to see a Mike Trout on. And now, of course, Ohtani as well, because you know he'd be throwing and hitting in a game or two. So it's just sad to see the. I'm not an Angels fan. We're all very scared and shell shock from what they did in 2002. So I'm always going to hate them and the Rally Monkeys for that reason.
Monkey.
But I do feel bad for Mike Trout because I think he's a great guy and does a lot for the city of Philly and locally in Anaheim. And just, you know, here he is. It's like everyone's like, okay, get on the Angels train. Get on them. Derailed. Bye-bye. Angels of old. At least the Giants don't have a 14-game losing streak, I'll tell you that much. Holy crap. Right.
They've never had one. In their entire history, they have never had one. They're one of like seven teams who have never had a 14-game losing streak.
Man, that's rough. It may go to 15 today. All right, so who's hot? Let's talk about it last week. Again, the Giants seem to be fairly even-keeled offensively. They have a couple of guys that do above average, but nothing. There's never been any of this, like, except for Jock Peterson's 3-home-run game. There's never been, like, super insane weeks. But you had Wilmer Flores going 7-for-20. That's a 350 clip. He had a bomb and 3 RBI. Jason Vossler, a modest 4-for-12 with 2 solo shots. Alex Wood had a great game last night, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run. And then we talked about Jacob Junis. His start this week was great, 6 innings, only 2 hits, 1 earned run. And, of course, he's quietly leading all starters with that 2.51 ERA and whip of under 1. Anyone else that you wanted to give a shout out to really. For this week?
Well, Yaz has been playing well lately. He had a good night last night. You could tell. Well, aside from that last at bat, but he and Jock both looked foolish against that guy.
On the hell of a catch, too, by the way. That saved a run.
Oh, that was awesome. That's why I wanted him to homer in the eighth, so he could just be the guy for the game. You know, Yaz has the capabilities to have those kind of games where he just takes over, but he's been hitting the ball a lot better lately, it seems, and that's been fun to watch. And a special shout-out to Donnie Doubles for his first career Grand Slam against Miami the other day. Basically securing that victory, although at the time, we weren't so sure because, you know, they'd just blown a 4-0 lead the day before. And Crawford, he also loves hitting in Florida. He hit a grand slam over the weekend as well in Florida. Two grand slams on the same series. I don't know the last time we've seen that from the Giants.
Yeah, no, that was great. Seeing that happen twice like that. It was very, very, very weird. But, Walton and Crawford with the grannies there. So, not bad. You know, we haven't been talking about the specifics of every game now, we kind of cover kind of highlights and whatever. But one of the highlights, I guess, last night, aside from that catch from Yaz, was the fact that they went extra innings, held them. And then, who was it? Sorry, Luis Gonzalez rips one to right field. And you can see the runner coming around third, and he was going to be held. And Blackman just simply didn't pick it up. I was looking at the replay over and over again, and you can see Blackman's head comes up. He's coming up to check the runner. And he picked the glove up too early. And then he was like, oops, left the ball about 3 feet behind him. And then it was like, oh, ran home, winning run. So, like, that's something I expected the Giants to do. So it was good to see that. But the Rockies are going to Rocky, right? The Rockies are going to Rocky, so.
They are. So. That's why it's frustrating, though, when a guy like Senzatella comes in with, like, a 6 ERA and then shuts down the Giants for 6-7 innings. It really felt like they should have gotten better swings off last night.
Yeah, but you're right, though. They finished that very long road trip, 5-5. You can't ask for anything more than whenever you can split on the road and win at home. But now they're back at home. They're facing the Dodgers for 3 and then Kansas City for 3. They got to win today to start off that road, the home stand, you know, in that positive note. And hopefully squeeze 2 out of 3 from LA. They really need to. I mean, I feel like certainly if they get swept, that's going to be semi-disastrous for them, but... I mean, they got to hang with the Dodgers, man. And the only way they can do that, you got to chip away at that lead. They're already 0-2 against LA this year. So you win 2 out of 3. You're still 2-3 against the Dodgers this year, right? You still got a losing record. They got to get these series won at home. They just have to. They got to pull out of this funk. But like you pointed out, at least the Dodgers haven't been pulling away.
Right, and this is why you can't count the Giants out right now, is so many head-to-heads. You said they've only played the Dodgers twice. I mean, that means they've got 16 or 17 more times to play them. So when you're looking to just shave a full game off by directly playing the guy ahead of you, the Giants still have a ton of chances left. So, again, it'll be a test for the Giants, you know, facing the Dodgers, the better team, yada, yada, how do they do? And we'll see, you know, especially with Saturday being a bullpen game. The Dodgers could absolutely blow them out of the water, or it could go either way. So I hope for 2 out of 3, and I hope for a win today. I mean, Logan Webb needs a really good outing after that outing in Miami where he just couldn't find the plate and couldn't get a hold of a slider. So it'd be good to see him really come out and do that now, because he'll have at least one more start on this homestand, probably against Kansas City. And I was peeking ahead to Kansas City. There's, like, nobody left from the 2014 World Series. It's Salvador Perez, and that's it. I can't see any other name that reminds me of anybody.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Granke wasn't there. I mean, none of the relievers. It is. It's just Salvi. That's unbelievable. The guy who made the final out is the only one left.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, Giants only have what, 2? So Crawford and Belt, right? No one else. So.
8 years. Oof, sorry.
It's a long time in baseball. It really is, especially in this day of free agency and everything. You know, it's amazing that the Giants actually were able to hold on to those guys for so long and have been. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's the end of an era. We recognize Crawford still got one more year with the Giants. Belt, we don't know. This is his last contract year, at least right now. I mean, we could be, you know, here in a couple of years and that's it. Everyone will be gone from those World Series teams. And it's just going to be very, very, you know, melancholy to think about. But you also look back and go, well, crap, it's already been 8 years since they won their last one. So time is flying by. You know, can't keep these things forever. But all right, our last segment here, why are the Giants going to win it all? I'm going to say they're going to put together – they've been mediocre. They're going to put together a couple of very long winning streaks, you know, 6, 7, 8 games a couple of times in a month or so. They're going to pull back into a comfortable mix of the wild card. Again, I think it's going to be very difficult to catch the Dodgers this year, not because of the 5.5, it's because the Dodgers have been not great, and they're going to go on their streak, right? It's going to be this horse race, and I think they're just – that thoroughbred is just going to keep ahead of the Giants. And the Giants were 10-9 against the Dodgers last year, and they've only started off 0-2, so they started off bad last year as well. But if they go into this series and they get swept or lose 2 out of 3, that really puts them in the hole to try and shave anything off the head-to-head mark. So, but I do think the Giants are going to keep their nose in the mix for the wild card with a couple of nice months here, and then get hot in the playoffs. What say you?
I'll say a trade, but a pre-deadline trade. I say a trade that they make maybe in early July before even the All-Star break or near the All-Star break. I'm not sure if it's going to be for pitching help or catching help, but I can see one of those two things. So I'll say that Farhan puts something into action in the next 28, 30 days from now. I think the Giants will have made a trade by then. And that's why they'll win it all, because they're being proactive. And that's what Farhan does. 47 players have already played for them this year. And they're definitely going to pass 60 by the end of this season. I mean, I'm sure there are guys, Shelby Miller, who knew, but I guarantee you he's going to get innings with the Giants this year.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he will. And just as a side note, because you brought up the trade, just to think about, the Giants would have never spent the money that the Rockies did, but even if they spent 70% of the money on Chris Bryant, how much they'd be kicking themselves right now. I'm just saying.
You and I both had the same amount of home runs as Chris Bryant. We could be getting the same salary to do what he's done so far.
That's right. I wouldn't mind going to a trainer's room and getting worked on and having a nutritionist make my food right now. And then getting paid on top of that, I'd be cool with that. Yeah, no, it's pretty remarkable how bad this contract has started out for the Rockies. A lot of time left, another 6.5 years, but pretty bad, pretty bad.
Yeah, good luck anyway, with that.
Yeah, good luck, Colorado. But everyone, when they made that deal, we talked about it. We're like, Colorado, what the hell are you doing? Like, that's crazy, but Rockies are going to Rocky. Anyway, so coming up, we're going to have 2 weeks until our next podcast because I am going to be on vacation. So we're going to record tentatively 2 weeks from today on Thursday, June 23rd. So in that stretch, the Giants will be finishing up against the Rockies today. Then they have 3 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Royals. Then they go on the road for 3 at Pittsburgh and then 4 at the Braves, which could be a big series if they're both kind of neck and neck in the wild card race because they only play them twice this year, so that could go a long way in determining wild card positioning for the end of the year. Anyway, you can follow us on social media at TortureCast on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, and at Willie Dills for the absent Willie. He is starting his packing to move from Austin to San Francisco, so hopefully when he gets settled out here in the Bay Area, because I live out in the Bay Area, we'll be back to attending Giants games together, hopefully doing bonus sodes, doing fun stuff like that, and bringing you that content. You can email us with anything you want at torturecast@gmail.com. And of course, you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts if you're listening to this live, and everything that we produce is posted on torturecast.com. Eric, you got Giants chatter going on, and Coffee in the Cove. Yeah. What else?
Every Sunday morning, Coffee in the Cove with your host, Eric Nathanson, because I had a brainchild one late night, and now I'm following through with it. So every Sunday morning, Coffee in the Cove, where we have a rotating group of guests and Giants chatter. I just want to say, I mean, we had a great post the other day from somebody who said that they're starting to migrate from other groups to our group, meaning there's good, knowledgeable baseball fans who keep up on it. And I'm not just talking about the admins, like the people who are there for the game threads. Mm-hmm. They know what's going on in game, in moment type stuff. And it's just another good place to gather with Giants fans. So Giants chatter on Facebook and watch Coffee in the Cove there every Sunday morning.
Yeah, and I've seen some of those positive comments, and it's been really – it's refreshing to see because, again, I finally blocked a lot of those other sites, or muted, I should say, those other sites because they're just beyond toxic. It's really frustrating to read, even if half of them are trolls or Dodgers fans or whatever. It's still just
– That whole post done. And thread, though, all those comments, that was just such a compliment to yeah. Giants chatter. You know, it was really nice to see. It was that, you know, and thank goodness for them. We've got new listeners from Giants chatter, I'm sure, so – you know, we're glad to have them because we have listeners from every different corner of this world. It's freaking awesome being able to do this stuff. And the Giants are everywhere. You know, thanks to the internet nowadays, you can watch and do everything you want Giants related from anywhere. And it's so cool that we still get to do this.
Yeah, thanks everyone for your continued listenership and engagement. We really do appreciate it. We're doing this as a labor of love for the Giants. For those of you who don't know, that we have been doing this podcast since the summer of 2011, June of 2011. So we just hit our 11-year mark. We're in our 12th year of doing this, which is just insane to me. And here we are in episode 255 talking about one baseball team. It's a little crazy, I'd say. We're a little dedicated. But anyway.
I mean, are people who started listening to this before they went into high school that are now graduating from college.
It's very, very odd. Yeah, if a kindergartner listened to our first podcast and continued, they would be a junior, heading I believe, in high school, heading into senior. And that's my daughter. My daughter's a junior heading into senior year. Oh, my God. Think of it that way. That's horrible. That's horrifying. That's our 12th year, so actually I think there'd be a senior this year. Anyway, point is, we've been around a while, and we really appreciate everything. Hopefully I'm going to be able to get to a game here because, you know, Eric and Willie aren't living in the Bay Area, and my schedules have been so tight, it's hard to get up there, but I'm trying to do it. Anyway, that'll do it for episode 254. We will see you in 2 weeks for episode Oh, sorry, this is 255. We'll see you in 2 weeks for episode 256. Until then, aloha and have a great week. See you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.